Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know how we do this. We take a huge stack of sources, articles, some internal reports, deep analysis, and we boil it all down for you.
And today, we are really getting into a topic that dictates so much. We're talking technology, economics, even geopolitics.
We are talking about NVIDIA.
Exactly. It's a fascinating study in what some of our source material calls Silicon Sovereignty.
Silicon Sovereignty. I like that.
Yeah. And when you read through the analysis, the scale of their control is just, it's staggering. We're not just looking at a successful company here.
No. This is different.
The sources are pretty explicit. They call NVIDIA the new petrostate of the AI age. They basically hold the keys to the entire kingdom of high-end computing.
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive. We're unpacking that architecture of dominance. We've been living in this analysis, Silicon Sovereignty. Mm-hmm. We want to trace the steps, the hardware, the software, the strategy.
Right. How did one company become this mandatory toll booth on the highway to an AI future?
Where do we even start?
I think you have to start with the strategy. It's actually, it's an old idea, but they've just perfected it for the digital world.
Okay.
It's the pick and shovel strategy, you know, from the 1849 gold rush.
Right. Don't dig for gold, sell the shovels.
You got it. If you want to get rich in a gold rush, you don't want to be a miner. You want to be the one selling picks and shovels and, you know, denim pants to every single miner.
So NVIDIA doesn't have to win the race to build the ultimate AI. They don't need the best self-driving car.
No.
They just need to make sure that anyone and everyone who is trying to do those things has to buy their tools first.
That's the game. They've cornered the market on the essential tools, the high-end silicon that everyone from OpenAI to Google has to buy just to get started. It is like a masterclass in winning capitalism by just controlling the infrastructure layer.
And that's really why you should care about this. That distinction, infrastructure versus application, is everything.
It is.
If one company controls the pipes, they set the price, they set the pace, they decide who gets to innovate and who doesn't. You want to build the future. You have to pay the toll.
And that toll is getting more and more expensive, and it all comes down to a very specific physical object.
Let's get into that, the hardware.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about the chip in your laptop. This is a different class of machine entirely.
Oh, yeah. It's the H100 chip and whatever comes next. And the source material, I mean, it doesn't mince words. It calls it the nuclear warhead of 2025.
Wow. Okay.
And honestly, it's earned that title. It is the absolute peak of computing design for deep learning. The way it processes the math required for these huge AI models, it gives them a performance lead that's measured in months, sometimes years, over anyone else.
Okay, but hang on. A great piece of hardware is, well, it's great for today. But tech history is just a graveyard of companies that had the best chip for 6 months and then got leapfrogged. Mm-hmm. What stops a rival from just building a better one next year?
And that is the question. And that's where the analysis shows their real defense. It's not a simple moat. It's a whole integrated system. The line they use is, hardware is the trap, but software is the prism.
The hardware is the trap, software is the prison. Explain that.
The H100 chip, with its incredible performance, that's the trap. It lures everyone in. But the software, that's the prison. That's the long-term lock.
And when we say software, we're really talking about one thing, CUDA.
Exactly.
CUD all the time.
Break it down for us. Why is it a prison and not just a tool?
Right. So CUDA, it stands for Compute Unified Device Architecture. But that's not important. What's important is that it's not just some software you download. It's an entire ecosystem. Mm. Libraries, development tools, drivers, everything you need to unlock the power of their GPUs.
Okay.
And here's the kicker. It's been around for over 15 years.
Yeah.
So every major AI breakthrough you can think of, every big model, every class taught at Stanford or MIT on machine learning, it's all been built on and optimized for the CUDA stack. So let me get this straight. If I'm an AI researcher, I spent my entire career, maybe a decade, learning how to write code for CUDA.
Yep.
And then some other company comes along with a chip that's maybe 10% faster or cheaper. But I have to rewrite everything, all my code, all my tools.
That 10% savings just evaporated instantly. And it's worse than that. It's not just rewriting. It's the risk, the debugging, the uncertainty. When you're running a training model that costs millions of dollars a pop,
you don't want uncertainty.
Nobody wants that risk. It's just, it's too sticky. They're locked in. The prison is comfortable and leaving is just too expensive.
So that's the 1-2 punch. The best hardware, the trap working perfectly with the most mature software, the prism.
That's the moat. And that's why the analysis is so clear that a company like AMD cannot just copy the chip. Even if they match the hardware spec for spec tomorrow, they don't have the 15 years of CUDA development. And that's what people are actually buying.
You know, to achieve this kind of sovereignty, it helps if the other empires are falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk about NVIDIA's rise without talking about the giant that just completely missed it.
Oh, you have to talk about Intel. It's the Intel tragedy.
A tragedy for sure.
It's a textbook case of a big company getting stuck. Intel was the undisputed king of CPUs. Sequential processing, one task after another, just really, really fast.
And they were great at it.
The best. But they were so focused on that, on PCs, on traditional servers, that they just couldn't see the paradigm shift. The sources point to the classic trio: hubris, bureaucracy, and missed opportunities.
So it wasn't a technology failure, really. It was a failure of imagination.
That's a perfect way to put it. They didn't get that AI training needed something totally different. Not one fast brain, but thousands of simple brains working in parallel. Their whole massive company was built to do one thing, and they just couldn't pivot. They thought AI was a niche, a fad.
And it wasn't just a philosophical mistake. There was a very real, very expensive blunder that gets highlighted.
Oh, yeah. The OpenAI mistake.
Tell us about that.
Well, early on, when OpenAI was just getting started, Intel had a real chance to become their key partner, to invest, to build hardware for them. And they just fumbled it. They didn't move fast enough. They didn't see the potential. The analysis calls it a $1 billion regret. But frankly, it's probably way more than that now.
$1 billion regret? Wow.
By passing on that, they basically handed the keys to the most important AI lab in the world to the people making NVIDIA hardware.
So that failure from the old guard helped secure NVIDIA's throne, but even kings face rebellion. And the biggest threat today seems to be coming from inside the castle.
The palace revolt. It's one of the most interesting dynamics right now. NVIDIA's biggest customers, we're talking Google, Microsoft, Meta, are also becoming their biggest potential rivals.
They're spending billions on NVIDIA chips, which funds NVIDIA's R&D.
While realizing that being so dependent on one supplier is a massive strategic weakness.
Because if you're all buying the same shovels from the same guy at the same high price, how do you get an edge? You have to start making your own shovels.
And that's exactly what's happening. The two biggest examples are from Google and Microsoft.
Let's start with Google.
Google has their TPU, the Tensor Processing Unit. The material calls this their search for independence. It's a chip they designed in-house, specifically for what Google needs. For search, for their cloud, for their own AI. They aren't trying to sell it to the world.
They're trying to be their own biggest customer.
Precisely. Build the perfect tool for their own jobs and cut out the middlemen.
And Microsoft is doing something similar.
Yep. Even though they're probably NVIDIA's deepest partner right now through Azure and OpenAI, they have their own secret chip project. It's called Project Maia.
Their secret weapon?
Right. And it's the same idea. Build a chip tailored for their specific cloud infrastructure, for the insane demands of the OpenAI models they host.
So the goal isn't to kill NVIDIA, necessarily. It's to build a lifeboat.
It's a strategic defense, exactly. Just in case the king decides to raise the toll too high. But for now, CDA's lock-in is so strong that these projects are just, you know, nibbling at the edges.
Okay, so we've got the tech, the software moat, the competition. But this story is bigger than Silicon Valley. When one company controls something this fundamental, it stops being just a business story.
It becomes a national security story. That's the final piece here, the geopolitical front.
How so?
The ability to design and produce these top-tier chips, it's now seen as a core national asset, like having oil reserves. And this is playing out right in the middle of the U.S.-China standoff.
So how does a specific chip, like the H100, become a political football?
Because of its dual-use potential.
Yeah.
It's incredible for civilian AI research, sure, but it's also incredibly powerful for military applications, for surveillance, for weapons systems.
Ugh.
So the U.S. government sees this as a strategic advantage and has put very strict export controls in place. They are actively blocking the sale of the most powerful NVIDIA chips to China.
And what happens when you block access to such a critical component? The demand doesn't just disappear.
Not at all. It just goes underground.
Yeah.
The analysis points to this boom in smuggling, sanctions, and the gray market. These chips are being treated like controlled military hardware.
So people are literally smuggling GPUs across borders.
Absolutely. Creating front companies, using third-party resellers, anything to get their hands on the compute power they need for their own AI ambitions.
And this is why it matters to you, listening to this, no matter where you are. the cost and the availability of AI innovation, it's now tangled up in geopolitics.
100%. If you're a startup in Berlin or a research lab in Tokyo, your ability to compete is now directly affected by these U.S. export controls on NVIDIA chips. It's creating a world of haves and have-nots, those with legal access to the best compute, and everyone else.
So to wrap this all up, this has been a really clear look at what the source calls NVIDIA's unipolar moment.
It really is.
We've laid out the three pillars. First, the raw hardware superiority of chips like the H100, the trap. Second, the unbreakable software moat of the CUDA ecosystem.
The prison.
The very deep prison. And third, the geopolitical leverage that turns their products into strategic assets.
Yeah.
It's a complete interlocking system of dominance.
It's a structure built to last. They didn't just build a fast chip. They built the entire workshop around the chip, and then they locked the door. They became indispensable at every single layer.
So we have the hardware as the trap, the software as the prison. It's a powerful model. But as we look to the next decade, we have to wonder what comes next.
And that leaves us with, I think, a really interesting question for you to chew on. If the hardware is the trap and the software is the prison, what's the third layer of control that will define the next 10 years?
What do you mean?
Well, is it maybe access to the enormous, unique data sets you need to even train these future models? Or is it control over the foundational models themselves, the AIs that are created using this hardware? The value might be shifting from the tool to the thing that the tool creates. That could be the next and maybe the ultimate layer of control.
Something to think about. Thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive.